This is a show that takes place in Chinatown, aka Chung Radio. So we play songs in Mandarin. Welcome to Open Up and Bleed. I'm hearing it. It's coming out of the computer. Please mute the computer. Nope, it's not this. Coming out of the computer, I swear to you. The headphones. Please mute it. If there's one thing that really gets my goat, it's technical difficulties. Welcome to Open Up and Bleed. I'm your host, Eugene Kotliarenko, and I'm joined this week by a very, very special guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
I'm Larry Levine. Wow. Known professionally as Lawrence Michael Levine.
Levine. I used to have a elementary school math teacher named Miss Levine.
There's no shortage of Levines in this world.
You know, I always wished your name was Larry Levin. Is that someone? I feel like that's a famous guy. Is it? What's the name of the guy who opened what's that called? The garage?
Larry Levin. I think it's...
Isn't it Larry Levin?
Maybe that's how it was said, but it's not spelled.
It's not spelled Levine.
It's spelled L-E-V-A-N. Yeah, that's
right.
Not me.
Paradise Garage. That's what it was called,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That would be cool if that was you. We'd have so much interesting stuff to talk about.
I know,
as
I
opposed
agree.
To the actual material.
Yeah,
which is
my...
Yeah, which is going to be boring at best.
Yeah.
And my...
I was worried about that. I'm
mind,
gonna ride over.
Mind-numbingly problematic and... racially and you know, we are two white men. We have the privilege of white men, not just the whiteness but the male thing too.
Okay,
so of course everything we're saying is going to be so fucking useless and invalid for the future of the culture. Do you agree?
No.
You don't.
No.
That's your privilege speaking.
It might be useless for the culture, but not because of the reasons you said.
Okay. It might be useless because we're just dumb guys.
Yeah, we might be uninteresting. We might be not funny.
So
but
you
I don't
were
think
driving
have
over here
off
thinking, off. Like, wow, this could be so boring. What am I going to talk about? Do you have a lot of insecurity, Larry?
I do, yeah.
What do you think you're most insecure about?
Probably my intelligence.
Really?
Yeah, probably.
Do you ever try to join Mensa?
I never did try. I never thought that I would qualify.
When I was a kid, I took a SAT test when I was like in sixth grade, and I did very well. I got over 1,300 when I was in sixth grade. And so they put me in a special... They invited me to go to a special program in Washington, D.C., but my family was too poor to afford it. Does that give me a lot of street cred, that my family was too poor to send me to this smart program?
I don't know. I guess I feel bad for you.
Hey, I turned out okay.
Yeah, you did.
Ultimately, I ended up going to an Ivy League institution where I had a class with your current wife.
That's right. I remember.
Not to say that you have been married before.
I haven't.
You've only been married once.
This is my only wife.
And you're still married to this marriage.
I am still married to the person and the marriage.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Is it?
Right? Yeah, I think it's impressive. Like, right now... I'm in my longest relationship ever by at least double, and that's 18 months.
Oh, wow. So you're one of these people who can't, doesn't really like to get involved.
I have this problem called wandering penis syndrome.
Oh, you have the wandering penis syndrome.
Yeah. So after a hot second of being completely infatuated and worshiping a goddess that I've fallen in love with, my wandering penis crawls up into the recesses of my brain and my heart.
Okay.
And it says to me, oh, this goddess is flawed. This goddess has fallen from her pedestal. Look at all of these annoying things she's doing. Look at all of these qualities she has that are terrible. Ooh, maybe that girl over there is perfect. Why don't I go find out? Oh, I can't find out if I'm going out with someone. I'm not an immoral man. I must break up with this person to find out whether that woman over there is perfect.
Right.
That is the logic.
Yeah. But I don't have that logic.
You don't have the wandering penis syndrome.
Everybody does. Men and women both get right. fed up with their partners and look at other people
and
wonder
others.
If other people would suit them better. Yeah, sure.
But aren't a delusional romantic like me to think that someone could be perfect.
No.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Not at this point.
Yeah, me neither. I don't believe in soulmates anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to, but now that I'm with the love of my life, I don't believe in soulmates. Because I feel like what the criteria for soulmates, and I talk about this on the show all the time, so all the longtime listeners are probably bored as fuck. But I just, in a world where you constantly meet people, hundreds of people per month, mm-hmm. you could meet a soulmate every 5 months.
Yeah, you could. You know? Or you could meet many, many people.
What do you do then? What do you do then when you meet someone that you're drawn to, that you find fascinating?
I just like have a container for mm-hmm. those kinds of feelings. I'm not saying that's the right way to be. It really just depends what you value in life. For whatever reason, I have
you,
the idea.
You value your incredible marriage.
Yeah.
You value your wife whom you cherish.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a shout out right now?
I don't know. I doubt she's listening.
I know. She's not listening because you didn't promote it.
Well, I assumed it was a podcast. First of all, and also you contacted me at the last minute. I assume someone else canceled.
Hey, by the way. No one else canceled. But
so you do this thing really flat by night.
Let me tell you. Yeah, exactly. Off the cuff. You think I contacted you last minute. I contacted you about 2 or 3 p.m., right?
Yeah.
Last week's guest, I contacted at 7:45 p.m., mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I got nobody, you know. And then she was like, yeah, just come pick me up.
Oh, so she's a reality star that happens to be a friend of yours.
But here's the deal. What I realize, what's so cool about this show, is that it gives me an opportunity to either catch up with people that I don't really have a chance to hang out with IRL, like you, mm-hmm. or meet people that I didn't know. I only met her once.
But we could hang out. Sidebar.
We should.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. The show is kind of this way of saying, like, I should be hanging out with this person. I'm not making the time because I'm a lazy motherfucker. This motherfucker's not making the time because he's got XYZ going on.
Well, no, it's crossed my mind several times to hang out with you, but I just don't know what the right context is. For example, I don't really know if I can mix you with other people. I don't know.
What are you talking about? You don't think that everybody loved me when you and Sophia had me over?
I did. Uh-huh. And I think probably most people did.
Did anyone complain? Did anybody lodge a formal complaint? Oh, that guy was so annoying.
No, nobody complained. But one time we had a party.
Oh.
And I found you pretty annoying that night.
In L.A. or New York?
But that could have been my issue.
In New York or in L.A.?
It was actually, we were visiting L.A. We were uh-huh. staying at, like, in a sublet.
Okay.
Or in a friend's place.
That yeah.
The place. And you were, like, you were very argumentative, and I guess for whatever reason that night, I didn't want to deal with it. Also, you were very, like, Machiavellian, and you had a very, like, debased kind of philosophy about life that was, like...
Damn.
Not... I didn't like it, and also I think it was somebody's birthday party, either mine or Sophia's, and you were arguing with me.
What were we arguing about? I probably just said something critical of you as a human being.
You might have.
But here's the thing. I always, whenever I want to say something critical, it's always lathered in praise. Because I do have praise. I don't get critical with people that I don't give a shit about. I have nothing but praise for you. So if
that is an interesting use of the word lather.
Yeah, well, let's say...
Whenever I have criticism, it is lathered with praise.
Yeah, lathered
with
praise. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hey...
I think it was a philosophical argument we had where I was saying that somebody could make movies for reasons other than wanting to be famous or wanting to be powerful. And you seemed completely dismissive of that notion at the time.
Yeah, I do think movies are pretty ego-driven.
Yeah, I agree. Was just the possibility that somebody could do them for other reasons is something that I believe.
Let's think of someone who seems like a very noble filmmaker, okay? I'll think of someone. A Chris Marker.
Okay, sure.
You don't think that person is an egomaniac driven by his own worldview?
I think it's complex why people make movies. I think some part of it might be ego. Some part of it might be a higher self need to communicate some depth of their soul or whatever.
But the foundation for that, to even think that your soul is worthy of being put out there into the world, requires at least a modicum of valuing yourself.
Yeah, you know? I think we're going to agree tonight. We just didn't that night.
Oh, well,
I agree with that. Yeah, yeah. You don't need to apologize.
No, I do want to apologize. Not just to you, but to everyone.
Yeah.
Because I'm glad that you're airing this out. You know, usually I put people on the spot on this show.
Okay.
And I appreciate that you're putting me on the spot because...
Am I? I didn't mean to.
Well, no, it's fine. It's good on air. I just want to say, like I'll go out, and I go out with Joan, my girlfriend, and I'll go out with whomever, and people don't like me.
Yeah, you...
People think I'm making fun of them. Yep. They think I'm a mean guy. They think, like, I'm attacking them.
Arrogant, opinionated,
someone
maybe?
Called me a negger. Just a week ago, I met these improv actors at a bar, and you know they're supposed to be fast.
Improv actors.
You know they're supposed to be real fast.
Yeah.
And then I was being fast back, I thought. And then like, oh, it's okay when they're doing it, but when I'm being fast back, I'm an official negger.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, all I want to say is like, I'm sorry. I have a lot of love for people, but I just want to challenge them to be their best possible selves, and sometimes that means taking it and giving it.
I think that's right, but I've never, like, if I was going to invite you to a dinner party...
You should.
I would have trouble choosing, like, who I think, who... What does it matter, right? What do I care if
they
don't
like you?
Isn't
that a more interesting experience?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Oh, man, but you really, like, you really...
I think you can have good experiences without arguing.
Of course I can.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think you can. I think people can.
Yeah. But you're right. I'm a perpetual devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And I like to challenge people and make them feel insecure because I think it's funny and because I think it breeds more vulnerability, which I respect more than anything.
It does. It also gets people thinking. So I'm not against
it. Hey, but
I'm
you know what? It's great. We're having a meta conversation because you're flipping it on me because you're making me realize that people might not want to include me in their positive and cool experiences that are full of interesting other people because they're concerned that I might bring nihilistic and sort of insecurity inducing energy.
Right.
That sucks.
Yeah, and especially I just moved to a new city. Like,
you don't want me to represent you and my energy to represent your energy.
It's ridiculous.
I'm actually realizing myself right now. It's a little ridiculous just because you should be secure in your energy. People know Larry. Like, yeah, Larry's such a posy guy. He's a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
He has a good hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has good...
That's a question.
He's mature. Like, you know, he's kind of older than us. He's mature.
I'm not older than all my friends. I'm older than a lot of them.
And he's experienced in the ways of the world. And, you know, he's got a pension and 401k. And anyway, I'm just airing it out here. I would appreciate it if you in the future, I might not come, but if in the future you invited me to your events, because I do think
I haven't had a lot of events that I haven't invited you.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you have.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
I might actually.
I don't know what you call an event.
No awkwardness, but you were on my mind because I, on Saturday, went to go see They All Laughed at the Arrow Theater, which is a movie I saw about a week before my first feature, Zeros and Ones. A week before we shot that, I rented this movie on videotape and I showed it to the whole cast and crew. And do you ever watch a movie when with people? And maybe if you watched it by yourself, you would love it. But watching it with people kind of makes you feel insecure. And you're like, oh, this movie is not good.
Yes.
You know,
also music, too.
Music. Exactly.
I used to put on music I loved in the car with my dad, and he hated it.
Oh, my God.
And it would make me, like, hear all the flaws in the music or hear it through his ears, and I wouldn't like the music anymore, so I stopped.
Yeah, what's wrong with us? Are we losers, or... is that just a real thing? Like,
perception is
just
crazy.
Like, you make movies. So you're a director.
Yeah.
You're a writer. Mm-hmm. You're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Your last movie came out about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It's called Wild Canaries.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it. Gunna.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've watched a trailer about 5 times. I love that.
It's a fun movie if you're in the right mood.
I'm going to watch it probably in the next 2 to 3 months. Definitely.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix now. It's a big comedy. Not big, but it's like, when I say big, I mean, it was trying to be like a comedy.
Arch.
Yeah, but no, I mean big, like it was trying to be like...
comedic.
For everybody.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I was thinking about talking to you about that. Let me just backtrack half a step. So, I saw you in this movie, I was like, you look like the guy in They All Laugh, the sort of like roller skating cool guy.
Yeah. Everybody who sees the movie
who loves women and women love him back and he's very chill. And then I was
he's
like,
he's on roller skates, though. You said a skateboard, but he's
I
actually
said roller skating.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. Well,
I,
maybe
we can
I
check, could. Actually. At the
time. Yeah, later on when we re-listen back to...
Who gives a shit?
But that's actually one of the traditions here in Open Up and Bleed. After the show, you and I, we go to a whorehouse down the block, and we listen back to the show while we get rim jobs.
Oh, my God. Awesome. Okay.
Okay. Hopefully Sophia is listening.
Ritual. Yeah.
And... So, what's up with Larry, I thought. And then I made the connection that Sophia's sister is doing the cooking thing. Mm-hmm. And you guys are part of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm going to go to that. I'll make a reservation and go to that.
Yeah.
So whether or not you want me at your fucking dinner party,
I think you'd be
great
guest. And I think it's been really, really fun. Last night was a blast.
Oh, you had one last night?
There were no arguments. There was nobody speaking particularly loudly.
Well,
and you'll change
pictures.
All that.
I saw the pictures. You know, so I made a short recently, and one of the girls who was in one of the pictures, she acted in it. Moni, did you meet her?
Moni? She was there last night?
Well, I don't know. In one of the Instagram pictures for the event, I saw
maybe
her there.
She
has a short blonde hair and like a tattoo on her thigh. And freckles.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Moni. She's real cool.
She was at the Sunday brunch.
Okay, great.
Yeah
sure.
Yeah, she was doing a crossword puzzle. She didn't get that.
She's a very cool girl and very talented and a friend of mine.
Cool.
And I don't think she's an actress, but I did cast her in this role of a sort of a neophyte escort who's just come in from sort of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
It's an early 90s piece, and I thought she had this sort of innocence.
Oh, it's
and
a period piece.
Yeah, it's loosely based on the Heidi Fleiss saga. You know Heidi Fleiss,
yes,
the Hollywood madam.
Yeah, not personally. But I know.
Well, a lot of people here do know her personally. Like, I tell
I know,
people.
That's
like,
why I was being specific.
Yeah, that's you have to.
Everybody here knows everybody.
So let's get back to this tangent.
Or if they don't, they say they do.
Everybody here knows everybody. Who do you know?
Who do I know?
You moved here.
Yeah.
You and Sophia are filmmakers, right?
Yeah.
And theoretically, in the history of this town, movies are the driving force.
Yes.
I don't know if that is now, but. But this is Hollywood.
Welcome. Still a huge part of it, right?
Welcome. Yes, I would say it's the industry. When people talk about the industry, they mean movies. Welcome to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And you moved here, presumably why? Well, talk. I don't want to presume. You say, why'd you move here?
We moved here. Sophia and I just were getting a bad vibe in New York.
What was creating that?
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot. I don't really know. I hate actually saying negative things about New York. It's almost like insulting a person, which I also don't like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, that person is you.
Yeah, no, you're doing a great job of that. Don't worry about it.
I'm joking. I don't know. I feel bad talking about the town, but I just stopped enjoying life there. You know, I found...
Was it the weather? Was it the people? Was it the trains?
It's a confluence of things. Like life just seemed to get kind of hard there, and we just weren't having fun. Like, we felt... Stuck and we
stagnant.
Yeah, and we were overwhelmed by all the noise and like it just wasn't fun anymore.
Do you think life should be fun?
I do actually.
I don't have fun in my life.
Yeah, I don't either.
Look, I don't
have
any fun.
I'm starting to have more.
Now that you've moved here.
Just in general, but yeah, actually, yeah, now that I moved here, I think there's a little bit more of a premium on fun here, which
is
interesting.
The bar for fun is lower here.
Is it?
I think so. I've never been more miserable than my first 3 years in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah. And I feel fine now, but let me do a little humble brag / whine, if you
okay.
will. I feel like I always get places...
Mm-hmm.
Before all of my friends or like compatriots. So, mm-hmm. for instance, when I was 18, I won the scholarship to go to Berlin, and I was so miserable there because I didn't know anybody. There were no Americans, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. there were Americans, but they were much older than me. And then, like in the next 2 years, all my friends went there and had fun together. And da-da-da-da.
Do you mean so? You mean literal places?
Literally geographical
not like
locations.
Places. Of the heart or places of the
no,
soul.
No, geographic.
Spirit. You mean like geographic places.
So that okay. I moved to LA, like, you know, and I'm a pretty smart guy. I have an interest in culture, but I'm a filmmaker, you know, and I feel like when I got here, I felt like there are no people trying to make like independent films like me.
Right.
And all the people I met who were cool were either artists or musicians. And most of them were junkies. I don't do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fuck, has this tape player been going the whole time? And
Does that mean music's been playing? Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Chinese music. And I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I was really lonely.
So you're hanging out with a bunch of junkies.
No hate. No shade. No shade. I'm still friends with people, right. And they're all clean up. Whatever. All I'm saying is that, like, I couldn't talk to anybody about movies. I got caught up in, like, just a system of just, like, going to movies by myself mm-hmm. every night. Mm-hmm. And, like, all those people there were, like, losers, you know? Like, they're all dweebs. And, like, mm-hmm. in New York, there's a certain,
did
like...
Did you know that they were dweebs?
Yeah,
did
I you try to talk to people. Judgment. I would try to actually... talk to people. Yeah, I'm pretty outgoing, you know? Mm-hmm. I go to a bar, pick up chicks, all meaningless, you know, mm-hmm. shit like that. It was empty. It was empty time. Mm-hmm. And then I made my first... Anyway, this isn't about me.
No, it's fine.
No. So you were saying that yeah. Wild Canaries was a general film. Now, you made that before you left New York.
Yeah, are we talking about that or the why I left
both.
New York and how I feel here?
Are they related?
Maybe. Yeah, no.
No, okay, then you continue. So now you moved here.
Well, yeah, what I was going to say is, like, it's nothing against New York, and, like, you moved here and had a miserable time. It's just, like, timing of my life.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it was just, like, we were spending a lot of time here. We made a movie mm-hmm. in Big Sur.
Oh, you did?
And we did all
Has that
the,
come out yet?
No, we just locked picture on it about
cool.
a week ago.
Is Sophia the official director, or you guys co-directed?
Sophia's the director. It's not in quotes. She really was the director.
No,
although I did write the script.
No, I didn't mean to put it in quotes. I just meant, like...
Yeah, no, I'm just being clear. Like, yeah, we didn't co-direct it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She directed it.
She totally directed
you
it.
You helped her produce it.
Yeah, and I wrote it.
And you wrote it.
And I have
with her or you by yourself?
No, she was guiding me. Yeah, uh-huh. It was like almost like a writer for hire. Like, she yeah. came up with this kind
she
of...
She didn't pay you, though.
Well, she said she was going to. We thought we were going to do the movie a lot bigger than we did.
Yeah.
But no, she didn't end up paying me. In fact, I ended up paying for some of the movies.
Great. So, that's yeah. what you should do because you believe in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not... I don't like to part with a buck. Who does?
Do you think it's turning out good?
Yeah, sure.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you guys shoot that?
Let's see. About a year ago.
What was the title of the
film? It's called Always Shine.
Always Shine?
Yeah. We shot it. It comes from a slogan, like a beauty school slogan. It's Always Shine.
Is it about like a new age thing?
Not really. There's a little bit of a new age waft that uh-huh. runs through it because it's set in Big Sur.
Right, so that's like, what I figured.
It's like the backdrop a little bit. Mm, but
it's a beautiful area.
It's a beautiful area. It's kind of about ego and, like, personality fragmentation. It's a really dark...
Could you give me the movie. Elevator pitch?
Just
a little plot line, one sentence, two sentence?
Yeah. It's about these two actresses from L.A. Mm-hmm. One of them is sort of, like, a minor success, like a scream queen.
Uh-huh.
And the other is just a total failure.
Struggling.
And they both moved here as best friends and, like... It's kind of working out for one and not
yeah,
the other.
And it's about the
now
tension.
She hates her, but she's
who killed. Hates her? The failure?
Yeah,
or
the failure kind of hates
resents.
Her. Resents her. Yeah, and it's almost
always
she's
shine.
Totally jealous, and they go to Big Sur to rekindle the friendship, and it kind of it's goes to as interesting, surprising. Places.
I feel like for a while there was like a thing about like a. Family members going on a road trip.
Yeah.
And now I feel like there's a thing, people go to a place, friends meet at a place to rekindle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because like movies, like they're making movies for $150 million or for,
or
you know,
$50,000.
$100,000 or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And like, so you got one location. You go to your parents'
sure.
house or whatever it was.
Yeah. Or you go to like, well, I'm done with my parents. I already did my parents' house two movies in a row. So yeah. I got to do, we got to get an Airbnb for a month.
Exactly.
And we got to film it.
So yeah, this is no exception. But within that framework, you know.
You can do a lot of great things.
You can. And we did.
I mean, Roman Polanski, like half of his greatest movies are all in one weird Airbnb.
Yeah. And this movie is kind of crazy and psychedelic and really cinematic. Like if you're going to shoot in one place, that place
better
is
make
Big
sure.
Sur. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's
cool.
A lot of stuff.
Well, Sophia's last movie she directed, that was also kind of in one location.
Yeah, it's...
And
yeah.
It had a certain thriller, a psychological thriller vibe.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, maybe like a next level version of that or something.
There's something a little perverse about this one, because mm-hmm. like, in Green, you know, what the big frustration that everybody had... Oh, I can't talk about this. It'll be a spoiler.
Oh, yeah, don't spoil it.
Sorry. Anyway.
So you were out here a lot to make Always Shine, and you thought, oh, why don't we just fucking live here?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like the...
And how's
like,
it working out
for
you?
For whatever reason.
How's
like,
it working
more
out?
More friends. I like it. I really like it out here.
Sophia
I don't know.
Sophia hates it, though?
No, she loves it.
So you're
she
both
probably
enjoying
likes it more
it.
Than I
do. Do you think the move has reinvigorated your guys' relationship?
No, our relationship was always vigorous.
Vigorous.
Yeah.
You guys have a good sex life?
We do.
How many times a week do you have sex? More than three?
No.
Two?
2.5, probably.
2.5. Like, that's the average number of people in a family in China.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 2.5. Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's, like, random days where we'll just do it three times.
Three times. And then, love
like,
that.
There's, like, some two-week periods for whatever.
Does Sophia market? Like, my girlfriend Joan, she has a thing where she, like, notates all the times we have sex.
Nah, we just kind of let it.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah. That seems more organic.
Yeah. Usually, I mean, we kind of like, and there's a lot of times where we start to, and it's like, oh, we can't. We have to go somewhere.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, so you guys love working like maybe the reason you guys start to is because you know you have to go somewhere. You guys love to be late. You love to sabotage like your like punctuality.
It's possible. You know, but we work in the same space, so like, you know.
Do you guys have your own rooms to work in?
We do, which is a cool thing about
it. Is your spot 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom?
We have a 3-bedroom. Oh my God. And two of them are offices.
Jesus. Wow, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
What's your rent like? It's really cool. 2K?
It's 2,600. Where it's really big, 1,800. But our place in New York, which we own,
right,
rented for like 4,500.
You owned it?
Yeah.
Do you still own it?
Yeah.
And you rent it out?
That's how. Yeah.
Oh my God! You guys must be so rich.
Yeah, that's another reason.
Oh, you're paying for the brothel tonight, my friend. Yeah. The rim jobs.
Well, we're not rich, but like, no, we don't have to work. We don't have to have day jobs.
Damn, fuck.
For the moment, for the time being,
pound it on air.
Yeah, but things could change, and then.
No, I'm not trying to jinx you. I'm just saying it's cool.
Yeah.
It's good to make that sort of it's good. You're lucky to be in a position where you could have invested in real estate in Brooklyn at a time when that's so in demand. And
well, it was a long time ago. Which
no,
is
but
one
that's
of the,
what I mean. Like, yeah. You made the choice when? Early 2000s or something?
Yeah.
Exactly. So you made that decision. Smart enough. You had the capital. Do it. And then now you're here and you're taking advantage of that. Yeah. Like, when I was living in Berlin, my most miserable time, I met a man from Stockholm, which is in the center of Stockholm, which is notoriously, like, really difficult to rent, and the prices are... And he travels around the world all year just renting out... And this is before Airbnb. This was 2005. And right. He was traveling all around the world just off of his Stockholm rent.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is cool,
yeah.
Right?
So, there's, like, reasons why we're less stressed out about money, which is great.
Yeah, that's
we
great.
Have more space, which is great.
Fuck, dude. Three better. What neighborhood are you in?
Glass Hill Park.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which is... Nice. Yeah, a lot of fireworks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because, you know, indigenous.
Yeah,
the indigenous population there
I didn't know about this.
To have fun.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Fireworks. And their definition of fun is more interesting and louder than yours.
It's definitely louder and possibly more interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I want to get involved.
The closest you get. You want to get involved?
Yeah.
Then you should.
Yeah.
You bring your own. BYOF.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of parties that I've had where just like neighborhood people wandered in that I don't know.
Strangers. Damn, that's right.
Cool. Yeah,
and you toss them a Tecate and you say, "Sit the fuck down."
Yeah, no, I said, here's the Tecate. Get the fuck out of here. This is a private party, man."
Wow, dude, that's what I'm saying. That's that bad gentrifying energy.
No, I'm messing.
This is
I'm
a
joking.
Private party.
Yeah, I'm joking.
No, I get it. I get it. People being murdered every day, Larry.
Nah, really?
Yeah. Yeah, in America, people are being murdered every day.
You're checking your cell phone. This must be.
Well, I'm like, okay, it's 9:30. This is the part where we get serious.
Okay.
Where we start talking about the petty foibles and the sort of minor triumphs.
I was interested in what you were saying about your you know, miserable time here. Have you talked about it on the show before?
I don't think so, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it was just because.
Why'd you stay?
I didn't have any friends. I'm a masochist.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed because I came here thinking about the Hollywood dream. And thinking I was capable of conquering this town without, I shouldn't have become friends with artists and musicians. If I really want to be a successful filmmaker, I should have become friends with all these weird bozos who, like, hang out near the agencies and, like, go to their house parties in the Hollywood Hills and, you know, are, like, have an interest in films.
Is that what you think?
I think if I had gone on that path and had sacrificed my sort of, like, social inclinations. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, the infrastructure that's here now wasn't there when I moved here. There weren't interesting people based in LA making low-budget movies that were personal. There are a lot of people just kind of...
Are there now?
I think there are. I'm not friends with them anyway. Not like that's really changed my reality, but I think that the infrastructure for that is much more existent now.
Yeah.
But for instance, here's the thing. When I moved here, 2 months after I moved here, the silent movie theater opened. For the first
six... You mean Cinefamily?
Cinefamily, exactly. Yeah. The Cinefamily opened at the Sound Movie Theater. For the first 6 months, mm-hmm. I was the only... Like, literally, me and, like, two fat guys over the age of 50 were the only people who would go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just watch great... for the first few years, they had really great, like, not campy programming. Not, like, laugh at the movie programming. But, mm-hmm. like, this is esoteric Korean movies that are awesome. Or
yeah,
this
they
is,
still have good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Probably. I don't know. I don't go that much anymore.
Well, it's really far... West,
but I was living in Echo Park when I moved here, you know.
Right.
So
yeah.
And now it's like anytime you go, it's like all the seats are taken.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a testament to them and the way they were able to build like this community. Mm-hmm. But it's also a testament that there's like this infrastructure of people who are actually interested. Same thing with New Beverly. Like the New Beverly, like you know, they would show like random Bergman films. No one show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I'm just saying I sense this sort of shift in cultural interest.
Yeah.
And
I
hey,
do too.
Look. I love cinema. I want people to be celebrating good movies, you know?
Yeah.
People who love movies, they should take what they can get. Film culture is dying,
right.
You know? So I'm not about to be squabbling about right. the fact that more people are interested in seeing, you know, Zulawski film or something like mm-hmm. that. I'm not complaining. But what I'm saying is that, A, I walk through this parched desert with very little support, and maybe that's why I'm such a cantankerous, yeah. foolhardy hater.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Our career is a big challenge.
Our career is a big challenge.
Yeah.
So you made Wild Canaries. Yeah. I saw this trailer. I have to say, it was delightful and comedic.
Yeah, actually, I saw the opening credits of your movie. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the trailer for your movie, too, yeah.
So then...
Matt Grady showed them to me.
Oh, Matt Grady.
In his apartment, yeah. Like,
oh, yeah.
We were all hanging out one night. I was back in New York.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a fun night. We were watching some basketball. I think it was basketball playoffs.
Cool, yeah.
And we went up to Grady's, and he was like so into the credits.
Yeah,
that
they're
he
cool.
wanted to show everybody.
That's nice. Teddy yeah. Blanks
yeah.
did that.
Yeah, he
you know?
Did mine too.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you wanted to make... Because same thing for Cloud, for A Wonderful Cloud, like... Or for all my movies, really, I want it to be super entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it can be personal and just, I know, entertaining for a random person, mm-hmm. I know I've succeeded even if no one sees it, you know?
Yeah.
So you wanted your movie to be super entertaining is kind of what you were saying, right?
I did, yeah. And I feel like I didn't really think that way with my first one.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in my bones to, like, not want to do something boring or, yeah. or self-serious or something.
Or, yeah, super self-indulgent,
yeah,
I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe people could argue that my movies are because I'm in them and all that jazz. But, like, you mm-hmm. know, I wanted... My first one, I didn't think about an audience because I was like, I don't even know if I can make a movie. I don't know if I have anything to
say. We're talking about Gabby. And
yeah, uh-huh. yeah. That was more just like a crazy experiment where I was like, yeah. can I make a movie? What does it mean to make a movie? Is this a movie?
What's the process?
Yeah, like, and will like, anybody ever watch it? It was all like...
I saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
how we met.
I know. And I ended up, you know, like, it wasn't a movie I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't make... I didn't understand enough about the filmmaking process to know what I could or couldn't do. You know what I mean?
I think the tricky part as a filmmaker, right, like, to do something... And only the best filmmakers can do this. Like, I'm talking about, like, Bergman, Altman, yeah. Scorsese. Yeah. Knowing the balance between right. what to control fully... And where to relinquish control. And just in terms of formal ideas, and in terms of acting style,
yeah.
you know, just finding the balance between your vision, your stylized vision in your brain, and the utter humanity that's being brought to the table by your cast and by your
yeah,
crew.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well,
but those people also had a lot of support. And... Came of age and into their career at a time where so many fewer people were doing this, you know. And I think
you think competition is sort of like, or there's the landscape being cluttered is challenging.
I think it's very challenging. Yeah,
But at the same time,
I think it's like the foremost challenge that.
At the same time, I don't see that many, and no hate to people who are in our peer group or whatever. I see maybe one or two movies per festival that I've gone to with my recent movie mm-hmm. that I think are entertaining, that I think are engaging to a general audience. There's no there's no inherent reason why anyone should care about a random Swedish guy's philosophical musings, you know, whether there's 100,000 filmmakers or whether there's 100. Do you know what I mean? There's a reason that Bergman stuff connects. I'm not trying to compare us to that, but we should be striving for that, right?
Yeah, but we're striving for that, and an infrastructure for that doesn't exist for us. Some very different conditions, social conditions exist for us.
Yeah.
And that affects what the work actually is.
Can be.
Yeah.
But we should be smart enough to come up with formal and logistical ideas, formal ideas and concepts and narrative concepts that are driven by our logistical limitations. I'm sure you can you can embrace that.
Yes, and that's what I was saying about my first movie that anyone saw, Gabby on the River in July, where I was like, can I make a movie? I have no idea. And like, can I do it for this budget? I have no idea. Yeah. And it turned out the movie I wanted to make, I didn't have enough money to make. So I had to end up cutting and going and like changing all this stuff as we were shooting so I could make a movie that like, you know, could actually
exist
and be finished. Yeah. So
I think you should be proud of that movie. There's a lot of good things about it.
Yeah. There's really good acting. I think. No, you don't think so?
I think some.
Yeah.
I think some of the acting in it is really good, and I think some of it is fair.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good, but, you know, it's
my movie. It's important. If you're a director and you have a finished movie, if you're not celebrating all of the performances in your film, this is my opinion, you know what I mean? But if you as a director aren't celebrating all the performances of the people in your film that's done, then you are a dishonest and a foolish director.
Really?
I think so. Like, if you see weakness in performances and you see bad performance in your work, you should never let it into the film. You should cut it. So you're talking about a completed film and you think all the performances are great. You should.
But if your standards are really high, there's going to be, and you imagine something in your head, there's going to be performances that don't come up to snuff.
Gone.
And
you just have to get rid of them.
Well, no, but you have to put that. Sometimes there's performance in some of my films throughout my life where I'm just like, hey, that's not the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, but you know, you're right.
Some because of it is action, mine, you know. You're
a great performer.
You have, thank you. You have five takes. Yeah. You have to use the best one.
I've been there, man. But you know what? You're right in a way because actually I showed this short that I haven't released yet, but I showed it to someone yesterday and they're like, oh, I loved this girl. And like literally, I think that's the worst performance and the people go like, I love this. She's so on. And then I was like, wow. Like, you know, so
that's
right.
That
when you put
all the time.
When you put the art out into the world,
it's
not your, people have their reactions and they embrace what they embrace. And as the filmmaker or as the artist, you just have to say, cool.
Yeah. I mean, I just think I do the best I can. That's what I do.
You know? So you want to entertain people. Okay.
Yes,
so
I do.
The first movie, you don't know who's going to entertain, but it proved you could make a movie. And so the second movie.
Yeah.
Wild Canaries.
Yeah. I really wanted to entertain
and
people.
Do you think you did it?
Some people, yeah, totally. I mean, I've been in screenings where everybody was cracking up.
But you go. Doesn't that feel good to pay
it
less?
It feels great. Yeah. It's like the best feeling in the world. But not everybody likes the movie. On the internet, there's many people.
A lot of hate.
I don't know about a lot.
What is the IMDb rating?
I don't know. Oh, that's
what
not
is
bad.
The iTunes rating?
The IMDb is like maybe 6.5.
Six something. Got it.
6.5, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, for an independent film, if you can break six, because you know half. It's like you're reading Yelp, and like half the motherfuckers on Yelp are like, I don't like this place. The decor is too old. Like I just discount all those reviews to begin with.
Yeah,
you know,
or like their reason is crazy. Or they clearly didn't watch the whole movie. They watched 10 seconds. And they're like, this is junk. Yeah. One star.
Yeah, this looks like garbage or whatever, or like there's no one famous in this, so fuck it.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing
people
hate.
Like, you have to discount half of this. If you can break six, you've done well, my friend.
Yeah. Okay.
So then,
and the Rotten Tomatoes is pretty good.
The Rotten Tomatoes. You know what? Here's one thing. It's obviously useful on a sales and encouragement level to get good reviews.
Well, yeah.
But the critics, they're just the same as some motherfucker on IMDb.
Or worse.
But in terms of just like their take on things.
Yeah, they're just random.
They're just randos. Right. Exactly. So, I love reading like Wesley Morris or, you know, there's certain critics that I really like.
Yeah.
But, I mean.
I really try not to pay attention. It's hard not to, but like I know the scores because.
You have to do it because you're trying to you have to be like the driving force behind, like, you know, branding your film in a certain way.
I guess that's why I went off social media, because I was like, look, when Wild Canaries was coming out, it was really intense for me, because I really don't like to be criticized. I don't.
You're insecure.
Yeah, I'm insecure. I'm affected unduly by criticism.
What is the worst thing you've ever done when someone... That's why you thought I was such a dick at that party, because I maybe lobbed one little... What's the worst thing you've ever done?
No, I'm not that sensitive.
No, hey, come on. You're a little pussy. Just own up. And
I don't think I am.
Okay. Well,
I don't think I am.
Here you are being defensive on air.
But there's some people who never even bother to put themselves out there or read about it.
Hey, I'm very proud of you, Larry. Yeah. Very proud of you, Lawrence Michael Levin. What's the worst? Have you ever engaged in self-harm?
No. From a critic's review?
Or from any sort of feedback that you valued?
Self-harm?
Like cutting?
No.
What? It's not funny.
No, not at all. I mean, I've...
Have you cried ever? Ever cry over a negative response? Like your grandma hated your work?
No.
Does your family like your work?
They say they do.
They do? My family hates... Only recently has my family even said to me, I understood this. You know? Yeah.
They'll say bad things about movies that I've acted in.
Because they're like, they know it's like, whatever. You don't have ownership over it.
Or even me in the movie. They'll be like, not your best work.
Yeah. You know? Jewish. Like, your family's all Jewish?
Yeah.
Totally. That's a good impression. What other impressions can you do?
I've got like a weird kind of French guy that was from Club Med.
Let's hear it.
This is my first imitation.
Can you say
he talks like this? He's the guy who announces the shows that hyping at Club Med every night. They say, "Welcome to tonight's extravaganza."
This is supposed to be French?
I don't know what he was.
This is like Yugoslavian, dude.
He's from some European country, and he talked like this.
Oh, I see. There you go. There's a little bit of like a Swiss. Yes.
I don't know what he wants.
It's flying all over the place. It's like actually like some sort of American con man who spent like 20 years in Europe.
It's a very strange accent.
Yeah. So what else you got?
What else do I got? I can do. I can do like, you know.
Asking a white guy to do foreign accents
is dicey. Yeah,
yeah, it's dicey because if you move into Africa, South, if you move into the, what do they call it, the global South, yeah. I think that's even a controversial term.
There's a tough
East
time.
Asia. Yeah. You do something like that, you'll be going to ACLU prison.
I grew up in the time of, I went to college in the time of like where PC was.
You're basically
really
what, 49 years old?
I'm 39.
Years old. I see.
Yeah, but 40, people in their 40s, early 40s.
You're like a Gen Xer.
I am a Gen Xer. Like toward the tail end of it, but
so
I'm
you went
in
to college
it.
In 95 or something?
Yeah, and I relate to it. That's why all this like self-promotion on the internet, that was not
weird.
My culture
That's
growing
so
up.
Weird
no,
too.
We were just like negative.
Fuck corporate branding. And now everyone is a mini corporate
brand.
Yeah,
it's really weird. And I can't, I'm just like, just, it's ingrained in me that that's just bad behavior.
Yeah, that's, you know? That's for like really vapid people who want to be either politicians or like fame whores do.
Exactly.
As opposed to just the general cultural norm.
And now I know like, okay, that's just the general norm. And like, I can't judge people for it because there's just too many. Like if I
it is the norm, you're
that,
the freak.
I'm
I mean,
the freak
you're
now.
The one who represents some sort of suspicious interests.
Totally.
If you're not completely vulnerable and putting yourself out there on social media or whatever.
Exactly.
Like you represent some sort of weird old status quo.
Right. Right, and I'm struggling with that in my life. Like, does that make me, like, am I wrong? Was everything we thought wrong? Like, and I believe it probably was.
Don't you
like,
think every generation says that? Is everything we thought wrong, man?
Yeah, but it's weird not to be in a generation. But I hang out with a lot of people who are younger because I'm, you know.
Because you're a pervert.
I'm a pervert.
A pedophile,
exactly.
If you will.
Yeah, exactly.
You hang out with 14-year-olds.
Yeah. I mean, that's my emotional maturity level.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but they're all better at self-promotion.
Hey, I just went to an art gallery, and one of the main reasons I went was because I heard the barbecue is off the chain. There's an Argentinian guy who does the barbecues
there.
Oh,
really?
And, it was delightful. I had chicken, I had sausage, steak, and, you know, I have this policy at home. I only eat beans and produce and fruit.
Okay.
And then when I go out, I eat meat. Yeah.
Okay. What's
it's a new diet I invented. I want to give it a name. What do you think would be a good name for that diet? 50-50 diet?
Sure, sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so at this place, I got...
If you eat out 50% of the time,
yeah,
then
exactly.
That works.
You have to.
If not,
you have to eat out 50% of the time
to
be on
this
diet.
You have to figure out the exact percentage you eat out.
Well, no, actually, it should
call
be
the diet
four days a week at home, 3 days a week out.
Okay. Yeah. Every meal?
Just the balance should be a 4-3 ratio. Anyway, so there I stole beer. Ooh. And then I said to you, hey, I got you a beer, man.
You stole beer?
Oh, I just took it from the cool, you know, I put them, you know, nothing too sexy, Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, from the art thing.
From the art thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's not really.
So I said to you on a text, I said, hey, I'm bringing some beer. And then you said, I don't drink anymore?
Is that true? No. I'm not drinking tonight.
Oh, why?
I just had a big week last week, you know.
It was like, okay, I'm going to drink a beer.
Yeah, go for it. No, it was just like every night I was drinking, and then I felt really, really shitty on Sunday. So I just felt really, really hungover.
So did you go to a lot of parties this weekend?
I went to a party. Yeah, I went to the
industry parties.
I went to the screening of Mistress America.
Oh, is that good?
I loved it. Yeah,
you loved it.
I thought it.
You
was
know, I can't even great. Bring myself to watch the guy's movies. I gotta say,
really?
Yeah, I couldn't watch Francis Ha. I watched the first 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I just couldn't. And then is this like that, basically?
Yeah, sure. Not really. It actually has less. It's more antic. Like, it's the dialogue is very, very
on point.
It's like
screwball-y.
It's screwball-y, yeah. It's like His Girl Friday or something like that. And
I like that.
Yeah. You can compare it to
They All Laughed is like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's clearly like an homage.
Were you about to say you can compare it to Will Smith? Because
no,
I kind of heard
that
weirdly.
Yeah,
you can compare it to
Whit Stillman, maybe, but like
I see.
A little
less stilted.
Less stilted.
They should call
less
him Whit Stiltman.
Yeah, he's really strange filmmaker. I think he's kind
of
interesting.
I've never met him, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the dialogue is so stilted.
It is stilted.
I love Last Days of Disco. You
me
put
too.
That on right now, I'd watch it.
Me too. I like it also.
Okay, that's my favorite of his.
Yeah, it reminded me of that. I don't think he
Mistress probably, America.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'm sure those guys get compared a lot. Are you kidding?
I mean, I thought it was great though. I thought
great.
It was,
his best movie.
Maybe.
I saw one that I really liked called Margot at the Wedding.
Me too.
I saw that like a few years after it came out, and I just remembered, I was like, oh, this is that Jonathan Demme wedding movie, you know? So I'm watching it, and I'm like, damn, Jonathan Demme is so funny right now.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then when it finishes, I'm like, Noah Baumbach.
Wait, so you think you liked it better when
I
you thought it was
so.
Jonathan
yeah,
Demme?
Because,
that's the
know,
thing about perception.
Context. That's the thing about context and backlash and all these things that cause us to be jaded. So I always try to not know any context, you know, because I know it like colors my just sort of judgment, as
do
it does everybody's.
Thing. Yeah, I do the same thing. So do you watch old movies, like really old movies, ever? Yeah?
Are you kidding? Of course.
Some people don't.
But you know
some
me.
Some people think an old movie is from the 80s.
But come on, do you know me?
Yeah, I thought you probably did.
I'm
but
an
you,
intense
you know.
Cinephile.
So you watched, have you seen Preston Sturges?
Of course.
Have you seen Christmas in July?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the phenomenon we're talking about. They all think he's a genius because, you know, they think he submitted
this. He came up with the jingle.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they're in love with every idea he has. And the second they learn that he wasn't the guy.
Idiot.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
So that's like a really
dark. That's a dark
I think about that all
observation and reflection on real humanity. It's I would say it goes back very far to Emperor's New Clothes syndrome.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, what do you think is the best Preston Sturges movies? Or I
like
think
that
is the
one.
Most radical.
Most radical?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think like that.
Yeah.
Should I? What do you mean when you say radical?
I don't know. I just want
wildest, most unusual.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the one I wanted to say, and so I wanted to psychologically prime you to receive it. And then, since you're probably the only person who's, I would say there are four people potentially participating in the show right now: you and I, and maybe two listeners.
Okay.
So you're probably.
Who are they?
I have no clue, but God bless you if you're listening. Send me a text 310-890-3887 and let me know how fun / annoying this show's going. It's the one about Rex Harrison. He's the composer.
Unfaithfully Yours.
Yeah. Oh my God. Is
Fantastic.
That not a conceptual
Fantastic.
Masterpiece or
it
what?
Is.
Structurally,
it is.
You know, with
it's
like
so
the whole thing where like
great.
Halfway through the movie, it's like he's just been imagining the like.
it is such a good movie.
Yeah, really.
Actually,
good.
I tried to show Sophia that movie and she fell asleep in the middle of it. So I got to show her.
You
got to
show her again. That's exactly where you don't want that. That will reinvigorate your interest when you get to that point in the middle where it's like, what did I just
watch? Well, if it's an old movie, you got to start early with her because she will fall asleep.
Oh.
Not because she doesn't like them, but you know,
just black and white.
There's something, and there's something comforting about old movies because they're old. You know, they're from a simpler time.
So, the fans have chimed in.
Uh-oh.
I am one of the two listening to the Preston Sturges Ramble. Show is great. Best episode yet. Wow. Larry, yeah, that's really a testament to you, Larry.
Is it?
I believe so. I mean, since this is the, logically speaking, if you want to use the rules of math and logic, the exclusion principle would seem to indicate that since this is your first time on the show, I'm here every week. This is your first time. Best show yet would indicate you are the variable. Consequently, you have made the show great.
Yeah, but you could just be on too. That's not really like, that's not a tight equation. That's not a tight.
This is also, let me.
You are rambly as hell, though. Like, we were talking about a bunch of different subjects and we never really got.
But isn't that okay?
I don't think we've got to the point of any single.
But isn't
one.
That okay?
Yeah.
I think that's what makes a good conversation.
What it's awesome doing the interview format is awesome to talk because you know
people
are
listening,
so you heighten your attention.
But isn't that also the reason why reality TV is so evil?
Why?
Because people know that it's intended for an audience, so then they amplify all of these sort of grotesque things about their life because they know that will attract more attention.
Is that evil?
I believe it is. Evil if it's presented in a fashion. I mean, look.
Your cosmology? Like in your cosmology of things, like there is evil, and that represents it.
I think the industry of reality television is evil. I think it's stupid, and I think look. The sad thing about television is that in general, and this all goes for the most brilliant TV shows, even shows that I love, like The Wire or Halt and Catch Fire or whatever.
Cheers.
Cheers, sure. Well, Seinfeld is a favorite of mine. I couldn't level this at Seinfeld because Seinfeld is like pure entertainment, even though it's a little bit cringy to watch it now because like you know that they're all weird, like racist or whatever.
Oh, but isn't just one of them?
Yeah, but also like whatever.
Oh, that's what we were talking about, political correctness.
We were?
I wanted to say something
what
about
What do you
that,
want to say about it?
Yeah, what I was saying is I think it's worse now.
Yeah, of course.
Than it was when it first happened,
well, yeah,
and that was like a major
thing.
It's
extremely clear that the idea of police, like the dystopia that most of these authors haven't considered, although maybe like it's embedded in 1984 or something like that, is that the most quote unquote progressive people would be the ones with the most like a narrow fascistic view on what is acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, you know? The thing is, like, I have this script that I'm considering on directing, right?
Yeah.
I really
someone else wrote it.
Someone else wrote
they
it.
They want you to direct.
I've
it.
Never
that's
thought
that's an honor.
It is an honor, and I never thought about doing that ever before in my life. Mm-hmm. And but you know it's a friend of mine, and he asked me to read the script, and I thought, oh, maybe he wants me to act in it,
okay,
or maybe he
feedback
wants feedback
or yeah.
something, you know, some obscure thing. I never in my
okay,
wildest.
So yeah. you read it, and
so I read it, and I was like, oh, this is hilarious. It's like,
and it's about that. What we were
no,
just
it's
talking
a
about.
Pitch black like satire of the L.A. improv scene, actually.
Oh wow,
the
yeah.
improv comedy scene.
Yeah,
it's pitch black, and the guy is like, he's like just a terrible person. The main character, he's a racist and just a nasty
yeah, yeah.
person.
Yeah,
but. Like, can you even depict a racist?
Oh,
no.
Even
if you're not like just totally 100% saying this is a non-complex, horrible person, and that's clear. What if
you
you're
should.
Showing it's a racist, but he has other character traits that
you
are
have,
not that bad?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I would say clearly in A Wonderful Cloud, my character is a misogynist.
Right.
Potentially other problems, like my best friend in it, Vish. Practically like, rapes someone, and you know,
right.
all for laughs.
Right.
So I think,
but like when Louis did that, you ever watched Louis?
Yeah, I've seen the controversial episode.
The controversial episode, like, was he not allowed to do that? I'm confused.
Which one are you talking about?
The he portrays a rape, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like
something
it, or something
like that,
not
yeah.
even something
yeah.
approaching
mid rape.
He forces himself on a woman.
Yeah,
and wasn't there a terrific backlash against the fact that he even did that?
Well,
as if doing that is
yeah.
supporting that.
Yeah, exactly. That seems to be the issue with a lot of comics these days, right? A lot of comedic people seem to be getting flack for even just mentioning, even
yeah.
just broaching. Subject matter that is problematic. But here on K-Chung Radio, Open Up and Bleed, we have no problem with any of that stuff. Well, so I encourage you all of the racial epithets you like.
No, I don't want that's out. Not what this is.
Okay, I guess I didn't understand where you were going with this, Larry. I guess
that's not what this is at all.
Okay, but for sure. Saying, I mean, like, save it for the car later. The car ride please. To the brothel later.
You're terrible.
You see, you're allowed to make fun of the Jews.
Because I am.
Because you are the Jew.
But I think, you know, when people...
What is it going to take for you to not be Jewish? Like, if you surfed every day,
right?
Got a bunch of tattoos, mm-hmm. shot up heroin.
There's nothing I could do.
You'd still be Jewish, no matter what.
There's nothing I could do.
I guess even Bob Dylan, who basically converted to Christianity, is still so Jewish.
It's like a cultural. It's a. I don't know what it is. What is it? It's not a race. I guess it's a race.
It's in your bloodline.
It's a race. That's what it is.
Hey, do you know the thing about how if your mother is Jewish, you're Jewish? You know how that's all bullshit, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Of course that's bullshit.
That's to prevent, Jews from entering general population.
I know.
It's to say, hey, I'm going to rape this Jew bitch, mm-hmm. and her son is going to be a little Jew bastard.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah. But if you read the Bible, it's not like a son of Mariana. It's son of Abraham.
Yeah, we
so if
all
your
know.
Dad's Jew... Okay, well, I'm just saying for my general listeners, I know I have a large Gentile following.
Them. Inform your large Gentile following.
The Goyim.
What about you? What could make you not Jewish? Nothing, right?
Nothing.
You're 100% Jewish,
nothing.
Right?
In fact, I was hanging out with this girl last night, and she said she was foreign. Mm-hmm. She said she hates all Jewish people, and she didn't know I was Jewish. You know, I said, I'm Jewish. And she looked at me, she's like, yeah, you have the Jew nose.
Oh, wow.
And then I said, yeah. Should have thought about that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I asked her, why do you hate all Jewish people? And she said, because this rich Jewish bitch embarrassed my sister in front of me. And then she told me the story, and I said, yeah, this girl sounds like such a little cunt, but, you know, not all Jews.
Yeah.
Well, hashtag not all Jews.
So many Christians have been so mean and humiliated me through all my life, and so I hate them, too.
Yeah, well, I hate everybody. I don't hate all Christians, but I hate most people, you know?
Really? I don't hate Christians. I think most people are dumb. Or other people.
You don't?
No, I don't hate... I can't think of a single person I hate.
I have serious problems with people of faith, and, like, some people in my family have, like, you know, sort of serious, like, faith, mm-hmm. because I think it's a react. A lot of us sort of Soviet, former Soviet people, like, when they come to America... You know, we came as refugees, whatever, seeking mm-hmm. asylum, because they're very anti-Semitic there. And so when they come here, they embrace, like, sort of a Jewish... Not Hasidim, but some sort of, like, Reform Orthodox thing.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, all like, God? That's fake.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
it's I don't know if it's fake.
Who's you don't know if God's fake? You think God's real?
I don't know.
Isn't that just a lazy, easy pussy way out to say I don't know? I'm just a pussy. Like, if he's real, 1% chance he's real.
Okay. If you want to put me on the spot,
I want to say you're a fucking little pussy.
I would say no. I would say that there is some meaning in the universe.
You do.
Yeah.
You think. Well, that's what Tolstoy... That's the conclusion Tolstoy came to
in
the
last good company.
5 years
that's
of his life.
That's my favorite writer. My favorite artist. Yeah.
I hate him.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And
what about the skill, though, of just, like, the vividness of the depictions? And, like, the worldview is one thing, but what about just, like, the characterization?
He just carried a notebook around and took notes, dude. He was, you know, right? The first thing he wrote was journalism, right? Sebastopol journals.
Okay.
And so I think he has a reporter's eye, a sensitivity to things. But a lot of it is sort of...
Yeah, he has a real sensitivity.
But a lot of it is sort of... It's like a formula for, like, cloying... Like, in the wrong hands... I'm saying mm-hmm. his hands are the right hands, but in the wrong hands, everything he does is just, like, sentimental claptrap. You know, mixed with a sort of, like... literally Tolstoy, as a writer, is what nowadays we call Oscar bait. Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing... He simultaneously celebrates and critiques certain bourgeois attitudes. And it's like the characters in his work that are, let's say, flawed, mm-hmm. right? Who are too blind to see their own sort of, like, flawed value system, mm-hmm. are actually just minor variations on the heroes in his work, who are just sort of, like, flaunting the system, but they're so clearly affirming all mm-hmm. of the values in that very same system. There's no one really, like, challenging anything in any of the things she's exploring. I'm talking about Anna Karenina, War and Peace, whatever.
Right.
Like bless you. Dostoevsky, for example, right, is a radical.
Okay.
Just saying.
He's Christian, too.
He is Christian, yeah.
Yeah, but he draws the same kind of conclusions Tolstoy does.
Well, but if you read Confessions... You read St. Augustine or something, right? Tolstoy's Confession, this thing he wrote like 5 or 6 years before he died, he was talking about how his whole life he's just like, you know, trying to find meaning in art and creativity and blah, blah, blah. And he went to all the scholars and all the philosophers, and he realized that there's no meaning to life, you know, and he's just too much of a pussy to kill himself, is basically what he said. He realizes there's no point in living, he should kill himself, but he's too scared.
Mm-hmm.
And then he looks to the peasants. Mm-hmm. And the peasants find value in life. And how do they do that? Mm-hmm. Because they believe that there something happens after you die. Mm-hmm. And that is his basis for faith. His basis for faith is that there has to be a reason for living beyond just this temporal world, which is clearly meaningless, worth nothing, because the peasants are happy because they think they're going to heaven. And literally that drives him fully to have faith.
Okay, but for me, it's not like what the person believes is not equal to their skill as an artist.
Right,
and that's not all there is to them.
Even though Roman Polanski is a rapist, you love his films.
Well, that's not a great example, because he's not like a huge guy.
What about
guy
Woody Allen?
That's a good example.
On the record here. Our show's almost over, but go on the record. Do you think Woody Allen raped his daughter?
I don't.
Me neither. But we are white Jewish guys who think Woody Allen's a great filmmaker.
I understand that.
And so we put
that
out...
That may color my thinking. It's possible.
You think Mia Farrow is lying, right?
I do.
All right. Any other last thoughts, Larry?
Oh, man. This is going to be archived, huh?
Yeah, let's archive forever.
You know, but this, look, let me offer the caveat.
Please.
That, like, I don't really know. This is just a hunch. Of course, nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody knows.
This is just a hunch.
Nobody knows except Woody... and God.
Yeah.
Because the child was a child. Dylan was a child.
Yeah, I mean...
Mia wasn't there.
Yeah, he was tried for this, and they let him off. So my assumption is there was no basis
for it. But we know that the legal system in America is fucked.
Yeah, that's
true. So many black men, Latino men, go to jail for things they didn't do.
Or things they shouldn't have gone to jail for. And also,
things they didn't do. Also, wrongfully convicted for things they didn't do.
Right. Yeah.
And Woody Allen was acquitted.
Right.
Because he makes such great films.
Yeah. Well, when was the last time?
I haven't seen the new one. Have you?
Yeah. I actually wrote about it. Is it bad?
In the talkhouse?
Yeah.
I want to do that. Can you hook me up with that guy?
Yeah, sure.
I want to write a review for that. I love it. I love reading it.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Okay,
yeah,
let's make that happen.
Yeah,
so any last thoughts here?
Especially when your movie comes out.
I'd like to do a little tie-in promo.
Yeah.
So this has pretty much been Open Up and Bleed. We've had here Larry Levine.
It doesn't matter if your movie comes. I'll just recommend it tomorrow.
Yeah. Let's just me and him an email or something.
Mm-hmm.
Any last thoughts, Larry? Thanks so much for being on. We really enjoyed talking to him. Got a chance to hang out and catch up.
Yeah.
Well, I always ask kind of a dumb question at the end. So when is going to be your 1 year anniversary in LA?
I think I got a while. I only moved here 3 months ago.
Okay, so 9 months from now.
Yeah.
Where does that put us? That puts us like May or April 2016.
Okay.
What's going to be happening April 15th, 2016 for you?
Oh, I should make a prediction?
Yeah.
I like to think I'm going to either have made or be making another film.
Like editing or shooting or what?
Let's say have shot one.
Exactly. Because the cool thing about LA, you could be shooting summer in January.
I know, it is. That's why everybody
all
came
right.
here.
Pound it out. That's why people originally came here. Tom Mix and all
for
that
light,
gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. This has been Open and Bleed. Tune in next week, Tuesday, 9 p.m. For another rousing episode. And catch us on the Kate Chung archives. Just go to katechungradio.org archive and search Open Up and Bleed to hear all of my wonderful guests. Thanks for listening. Strip Mall with Eric Felix and friends is next.